Welcome back to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I, of course, am your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios in Central Texas. As always, you can find us on the internet at www.texasscorecard.com. This week, I'm joined by Managing Editor of Texas Scorecard, Brandon Waltons.
Hello.
And Vice President for Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, Kerry Cheshire.
Howdy, howdy.
All right. We're doing a big coronavirus special. There's so much news to cover. I just thought, let's go through it, talk about what's going on with news, particularly focusing on what's going on here in Texas. I mean, people are tuning into Fox News. They're getting the international, national take on things, but there's a lot of developments that are going on in the state. And so hopefully we can kind of clip through those. A big lead thing is the governor of Texas has declared a state of disaster and has come in with a lot of measures impacting that are going to impact Texans' lives at least over the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Yes, and I was at the press conference where he announced that, and you know, at first it seemed okay. So he's doing this state of disaster, state of emergency. What that allows him to do is to waive certain rules and regulations in the law in order to address the crisis. And so basically, ever since he's done that, we've seen different regulations being waived. I mean, things as simple as, you know, if your driver's license is expired, you don't have to go renew it right away. You know, waiving certain trucking regulations to get goods to stores.
Yeah, it was like trucks that haul alcohol can now haul food. And we're going, well, right. Why couldn't they do that before?
But yeah, I mean, you're seeing that right now. Hey, we're having a kind of statewide, national, international emergency. Preserving the three-tier system is not a priority for the governor or probably most Texas citizens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting, lest people start to think that this is normal. There's some real constitutionality questions, I think, that we'll probably spend some time exploring over the next few weeks about, you know, can the governor just say, well, the laws are suspended, right? Does that mean that you have a rule of law? The governor is taking a very aggressive stance and has taken a very aggressive stance throughout his administration on whether these laws, you know, whether he has the ability to just suspend laws, you know, writ large when there's a disaster and emergency going on. I know we saw this back whenever the hurricane happened.
Yeah, we actually saw not only does he have the power to suspend laws, he also has the power to create laws with the legislature not continuing the plumber's board and him, you know, kind of breathing them back into existence by executive order saying we will continue to license plumbers in the state of Texas by executive order because of Hurricane Harvey for some reason. That's still making its way through the courts. I imagine a lot of these things will make it through the courts. You'll also see issues at the local level where, you know, do city mayors have the ability to tell restaurants they're not allowed to open? Do they have the ability to close bars entirely? You're seeing other stuff in other states where they're requiring people to have at least 50% of their workforce work from home and other issues. I mean, this is uncharted territory for a lot of, you know, federalism and constitutional issues.
Well, and just looking at some of the bans that have come down, the city of Austin, Travis County, I've been, you know, intimately familiar with that since I live in Austin. But I think the city of Dallas also, many other cities coming out with orders saying, you know, you can't get together in a group of 11 people. And that includes at your local church. So church services being upended by these local orders, a lot of questions about whether that is something that's constitutionally valid. It's obviously invalid on its face, and then they would have to justify it as, you know, under the strict scrutiny standard. I don't need to go into all the lawyerese on that, but some really interesting questions.
Well,
and whether we'll see churches and others step up and say, okay, maybe we need to file a lawsuit to try and
or to see them defy challenges. These orders yet. We haven't seen churches do that yet. We've seen, you know, kind of a lot of people voluntarily shut down. You've seen businesses offer to comply. You've seen workforces do the same thing. The question's going to be if we go, you know, a week into this or something, and a church decides we're going to open and we're going to have church, we're going to have 10:30 mass, we're going to have an 11 o'clock service or whatever, and how the local governments respond to that.
Are they really going to throw the pastor in jail for?
I think right now a lot of folks are complying because they're concerned about, well, you know, would insurance cover us if people were to be here when they're not supposed to be by local order and the building catches on fire or something? I think, you know, we go a week or so into this, I think you are going to see people start violating these orders.
Yeah, and these orders go through until the 1st of May. We have a lot of guidance from the president looking at basically telling people stay home if you can for the next 8 weeks. Let's talk a little bit about where we're at in this coronavirus crisis. This has obviously been going on since late in the fall out of China and then spreading throughout the globe, particularly to Italy and now to the United States. You know, the concern is if you look at the rate of growth in these other countries, that you would see exponential growth in this country. Conceivably, if nothing's done, you're looking at, let's say, 70-80% of the population getting the virus.
Right.
And then you're looking at, looking at vulnerable populations of people affected by that. You're talking 2 to 4 million people dead. I mean, it's one of the greatest death events in history from this virus. But at the same time, you also have to take a grain of salt and say, like, let's look at this in context. There's 205,000 approximate cases worldwide. Only about 6,500, 7,000 of those in the United States. We're talking 130 confirmed cases as of Wednesday in Texas. I mean, obviously that's growing as testing's going. 2 people dead in Texas as of midweek. So, you take the numbers, you take it seriously. I think people are taking it serious. I'm definitely taking it seriously on a personal level. But you also have to take these things with a grain of salt and kind of contextualize them. There is a panic element to what's going on.
I mean, absolutely. But at the same time, I think you hit the nail on the head. The real concern is not the fact that there are 100 or 200, whatever it is, cases of coronavirus in Texas. It is the fear of the exponential growth and what that will mean down the line. If you look at what has happened in some of the other countries, and the growth models there, we're seeing kind of similar things play out, albeit on a delayed timeline here in the United States.
Yeah, go ahead, Kerry.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're seeing kind of where the infections started, and they grow exponentially, right? So you're seeing in Italy and South Korea and China, all of those are maybe a month ahead of where a lot of America is. Right here in America, you see Seattle, Washington, and New York and other cities. Those are significantly ahead of where Texas is going to go. We know what this virus does. The kind of question you have to ask, though, is, you know, like right now there are more people dying in car accidents than from the coronavirus,
sure,
right? And I think if we were all told on January 1 that if everyone, if everyone continues to drive a car in America, we're going to have a ton of deaths. If that death number was a million, would we shut down the highways in America? Probably not. If that number was 3 million, would we shut down the highways? Maybe not. We don't know. That's something that, you know, you're having to see lawmakers grapple with, is how much societal disruption are we going to take? Because there is a cost to doing all these things. So, like, you are seeing people who are starting to lose their jobs. We're seeing the oil price war between the Saudis and the Russians and the demand of the whole entire globe come crumbling down. There's going to be huge externalities to coping with this virus.
Totally, yeah.
And we're just still trying to navigate what costs are worth paying.
Well, and that's one of those things. People, I think maybe it's a little bit of a modern thing. We think of death as a disruption as opposed to life being the disruption of death. It takes a whole working society to provide people with the means to survive. You know, survival is the exception, right? You know, you have to actually work at it. And so as we change and disrupt society, how's that going to affect things? Certainly going to cost human lives in terms of reacting to this. So very, very serious things. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on. Lots of changes here at the state level, but let's talk a little bit about what's going on through the federal government right now. Our congressional critters considering all kinds of ideas, from from common sense to extreme. Carrie, you wrote a little bit about the bill that's moving through Congress. Congressman Louie Gohmert, actually, of Texas, pushing back a little bit on this thing as it was moving through the House. I mean, it's basically a Democrat bill, but it has the support of the president. Tell us a little bit about that bill, what's going on with it, what Congressman Gohmert has been doing.
Yeah, so long and short of it is it's an $8.5 billion spending bill that gives a ton of money to local governments to help combat the coronavirus, orders a ton of medical equipment, does spend a lot of money internationally, over $1 billion on international aid to combat the coronavirus. This is kind of the stage one bill that the House of Representatives passed and then went home, negotiated by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat, and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, a Republican who works with Trump. You did see a lot of Republicans have significant concerns with this legislation. Ultimately, I think about 40 voted against it, and you had about 27 choose to not vote on this legislation. It was, then, very quickly after they passed it, they wanted to come out with 87 pages of technical corrections, then 109 pages. I'm using pages.
The air quotes here of technical corrections.
Yeah.
I mean, these are, basically unconstitutional changes.
New regulations that nobody voted on.
Yeah, correct.
So, with Congress leaving town, they needed unanimous consent to move these things forward. Louie Gohmert stayed in Washington and went and objected and objected and objected. It does seem he ultimately relented and allowed the bill to move to the Senate. The bill still hasn't made it to the Senate because they haven't figured out all those technical corrections yet, so they don't even have a firm piece that the Senate could vote on. Gohmert said that he did that with assurances from Mnuchin and Trump that the legislation would be improved. We have, however, seen literally just yesterday Mitch McConnell say, we're going to pass this legislation as is. If you don't like it, Republicans just gag and vote for it anyway. And then we're going to follow that up with different legislation. It's that different. Right now, this legislation provides all those things to state and local governments, to international aid. And it also requires businesses to provide paid sick leave to a lot of people. Now, it's made a lot of Americans mad because the only businesses that are affected by this are those who have less than 500 employees. So mom and pop, you have to provide paid sick leave. It's going to cost you a ton of money. Walmart, you're good. Keep rolling.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are frustrated by that. The new stuff that's being talked about in the U.S. Senate right now with Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and other folks, I mean, you are hearing talk about a so-called one-time stimulus check for every American that maybe they'd get $1,000 to help them, kind of cope through this to pay rent. And if you're somebody who's like a waiter or something, you're not able to work right now, so that you could stay in your home. There's also talks about bailing out American Airlines, United, all the industries that are hugely affected by this. I mean, you had the CEO of Hilton say that they've got sub 15% occupancy rates in America right now.
Oh, yeah,
their
absolutely.
Properties.
Hotels and hospitality industry mm-hmm. just completely being devastated right now, at least from a liquidity standpoint. You would hope that this crisis passes at some point and things go back to normal and at some point these companies will recover, but for the time being, I mean, they have debts to pay, bills to pay, and they don't have any money coming in the door.
Yeah, and especially as you look at these airlines and things, companies that operate on thin margins, regardless.
Sure.
You've at least taken away spring break, right? And you've taken away capital from a lot of families who would, otherwise maybe be able to go on summer vacation. If
yeah.
mom and dad are hourly employees and they've been furloughed because their factory or whatever is not being able to have them come into work, or people are not buying their stuff, it's not looking good for the summer vacation that they'd normally, buy four airline tickets and stay in a Hilton property or a Best Western or something. This is going to continue to ripple out for a long time.
All those ripple effects is certainly going to have recession, depression type economic effects. And the question is how long those things last. I mean, individual business owner standpoint, I mean, they have to be watching what's going on in this first bill out of Congress because, look, I mean, first of all, you've got a federal paid sick leave bill, which is something that's like arguably unconstitutional for Congress to be coming in. It's a very weird program. Okay, if you're a business with under 250 or under 500, and I was seeing in provisions in there applying to employers who have a single employee. I mean, you know, typically these things have a floor, right, as well. But pretty much everybody having to provide some kind of coronavirus-related paid sick leave, and then getting some kind of reimbursement from the Treasury for those payments and that whole whole program for that. I mean, folks are going to have to figure out how this impacts them and figure it out very quickly. And I mean, that's that in and of itself is disruptive to businesses that are really trying to navigate these things. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on here at the state level, some mm-hmm. very disruptive things. Let's talk about the elections.
Yeah.
So this is not entirely clear, but we have an upcoming runoff election scheduled in May. We have seen the governor already take some action on the Senate District 14 special election. Mm-hmm. And setting that, maybe tells us a little bit about what might be coming with runoff elections and with local elections in May.
Well, we already know. I'll tell you this. So we have, as a matter of kind of breaking news as we record this, you do have the May local elections. You have Governor Abbott coming in and giving a waiver to the local municipalities and such that are holding these May elections, telling them they can do it in November. I expect that, you know, as soon as we maybe even leave the studio, we might see that for the runoff elections as well. But, this is a big question because this is a big part, as you mentioned in the beginning of this broadcast, about whether or not Abbott truly has the authority under the emergency kind of powers that he has. I mean, this is another case where he's really pushing it. There are certain states, and we wrote about this at TexasScorecard.com a week or two ago at the beginning of this. There are certain states where it is written out. I mean, it is written out that the governor can delay these elections in an emergency. Texas, no such explicit explicit law there, but you see Governor Abbott doing it anyways.
Yeah, and using this provision in the government mm-hmm. code that basically says the governor can suspend, laws and statutes and regulations in a disaster situation, and that's all well and good, but that isn't really how laws work, right? Laws can't just be turned off and on, willy-nilly at the governor's will. That could be something that would be a constitutional provision or that sort of thing. And this is just a statute, and so it's unclear what the scope and limitations are on that. It really hasn't been challenged, we're looking at potentially seeing these elections delayed a very long time.
Absolutely. I mean, you see this election being delayed, the local elections being delayed from May to November. Right now, you've got runoff candidates, but you don't only have these elections, right? I mean, the elections, especially the primary elections, the primary runoff elections, are part of a party system heading into November. Certain stuff that needs to be done before November.
Correct. Right. You have to know who your candidates are on the November ballot. So maybe you don't see those delayed until November. But there's actually been this question of, is there going to be some kind of expansion of mail-in ballots? Obviously, mail-in ballots allowed right mm-hmm. now for people who are going to be out of town or people who are elderly. Could there be some kind of order that says, hey, if you're, confined to your home mm-hmm. because you're vulnerable from coronavirus, which is basically anybody who, makes that choice.
Sure.
You might see some very expansive growth in what goes on with mail-in ballots.
Yeah, that's right, Tony. You're actually seeing right now that the Texas Democrat Party and multiple lawmakers are calling on Abbott to allow mail-in ballots for all Texans in these upcoming elections. Right now you're only eligible if you're actually absentee or if you're over 65 or if you actually have a reason to not go to the polls. You or I are not eligible for mail-in ballot voting. You do see the Democrat Party want to expand that to every Texan. I've heard that the next push that's coming down next week is they're going to ask the governor to require everybody holding an election to mail a ballot to every single registered voter in that constituency, which opens up a lot of problems because, as you know, Texas does not verify citizenship on the voter roll. How would these ballots even be counted? We have huge problems with mail-in ballot fraud in the state of Texas. A lot of issues with doing that. but we're in unprecedented times.
Yeah, so it is very interesting. We'll have to follow how that goes, but it could massively change what's going on and massively change how vigilant Texans need to be as they are, you know, keeping an eye on their local elections. I mean, it's going to require some serious vigilance by folks to say, hey, do these numbers add up? Is there anything fishy going on? Because you do see these schemes where mail-in ballots are, you know, rigged from time to time. Mm-hmm. It's actually the area, you know, in-person voter fraud happens, but you see a lot more of it in this mail-in ballot arena. Speaking of political events and the nomination process, the Republican convention was supposed to take place in mid-May. Appears now that that's going to get moved to mid-July.
Yes.
There's a April 4th, I believe, State Republican Executive Committee meeting to consider that, to approve it. But we're looking at that convention being completely punted by at least a couple of months.
Yes. And so the State Republican Executive Committee, you know, kind of the governing board of the Republican Party of Texas, we'll have to make that decision ultimately at a meeting that they're scheduled to have on April 4th. But it looks like all indications are the convention, like you said, scheduled for May, going to be pushed back a couple months. And important for folks to realize the effect this has. I mean, you know, what happens at a convention? Well, you know, not only is it, you know, picking the platform and kind of legislative priorities and that sort of work, but also, again, on a practical level, I mean, you're picking delegates to send to the national convention. You are picking electors for the Electoral College.
Yeah, these are the people who actually pick, you know, Donald J. Trump as the nominee of the Republican Party. That isn't something that's chosen by, you know, a wizard in Washington.
Right.
It's by a whole, you know, convention full of people who say, hey, we want this Donald J. Trump character to be our nominee for president. And then the electors, we all think that we vote for president, but in fact, you know, there's this group of people who get together at the end of the year and say, well, we're actually going to cast ballots for this Donald J. Trump character or Joe Biden or whomever for president. So a very important process there. Interesting, the Senate District Convention, Senate District Conventions, county conventions were scheduled to be taking place this weekend. It sounds like the guidance that's pretty much coming out to people is because of all of the directives from CDC, from the president, from the governor, you're going to see these conventions kind of convene and then immediately adjourn, you know, at the door is basically the guy.
Kind of a technical thing because of the rules. And we're seeing counties already, they've moved these back to, you know, the end of April or beginning of May, you know, trying to get it to a time, you know, before the state convention, obviously, but they're definitely pushing these back.
Yeah, so you'll actually see that. And that's kind of a normal thing. It actually is. There are provisions in Robert's rules and the parliamentary procedures that you see that govern these conventions. You basically can't hold the meeting. So you say, hey, this is adjourned until time certain, whenever we can actually get together lawfully. Quick mention on the schools. So schools kind of haven't really officially been closed through the end of the year, but it really looks like, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking at this point, you're not going to see Texas kiddos going back to school this year.
No, I mean, they've all kind of, they extended spring breaks and they, you know, have set out, you know, a lot of school districts we're seeing are saying we're going to take this on maybe a week by week basis. But honestly, with the way everything's playing out, it's very, very hard to imagine that, you know, they're going to come back in May for a week or something. I think a lot of school districts probably out for the year.
Yeah, there have been a number of school districts in other states, actually a number of governors that have canceled school for the rest of the year in those states. Here in Texas, I believe the longest anyone's currently delayed is till April 17th. But remember, most schools have been out on spring break. They've decided to add another week of spring break. And then next week, beginning on Monday, is when this new online e-learning that they're going to try out for all the stay-at-home students is gonna really begin. So that's when Texas teachers will begin having to, you know, hold Skype sessions and Microsoft Zooms and Google Hangouts and try to assign work. You're seeing a big problem in a lot of Texas, which does not have broadband access. And maybe you have four kids who would need to stream a teacher at the same time. And maybe a parent is a teacher too. And it's literally just not going to work with the internet. So you're seeing communities start to really allow people to, you know, work, you know, move the Wi-Fi routers out into the parking lots of school districts and churches so that people could stay in their car, but use a laptop or a smartphone there to actually accomplish the schoolwork. So it's going to be a big struggle for a lot of our school districts, teachers, and kiddos.
Yeah, briefly, there was this kind of fight that appeared to be going on over whether they would continue to do the STAR test at the end of the year. Seems like the governor is now coming out, has now said, not happening, we're not doing the STAR test.
Yeah, STAR test, so that is completely eliminated, and later this week, we're going to actually get to see the first kind of national stuff happen with the AP College Board probably suspending AP tests. You know, if you're a high school student, we're also going to see a ton of regular tests, you know, probably the state bar, MCAT, the SAT, all of that stuff will get pushed back to at least the summer.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting. Well, the bar takes place in the summer, but possibly even later in the summer. Before we finish up here, I wanted to talk a little bit about what is kind of on the horizon to get folks who are listening, you know, prepared of how they need to be engaged. We're definitely seeing, you know, you mentioned it earlier, Carrie, we have this fight going on between the Russians and the Saudis with oil prices. Oil prices are through the floor in a way that we haven't seen really since 1998, whenever they were even lower at that time. But the lowest oil prices we've seen in a very long time. That means lower tax revenue to the state of Texas. We also have, obviously, people holed up in their homes. This has to mean a significant reduction in sales tax revenue. I'm seeing on the horizon a big fat deficit when legislators come back in January of next year.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, just for right now, what are we looking at short term? So we can look at Italy, we can look at New York, Seattle to see the likelihood of where Texas is going. If you live in Austin, Dallas, San Antonio, wherever in the state of Texas, you're probably moving like a frog in a pot slowly, step by step to basically home quarantine. You are seeing that ripple effect is already affecting businesses with people being laid off and furloughed across the state of Texas, across the nation, across the world. You are going to see a decline in productivity. You're going to see a decline in GDP in the state of Texas from what at least we were prognosticating, maybe not actually year over year, but definitely not the 6% growth or something that the comptroller was predicting. You are going to see lawmakers come in for a big deficit. You're going to see local governments all across the state of Texas, especially like, you know, if you're the city of Grapevine and you've got Six Flags right there or something like that, you're not having all these people come in. We do need local governments, and we're going to start kind of doing some deep dives at the state level to look for unnecessary programs that can be cut right now so that hopefully we can save people's jobs and pocketbooks and wallets when the legislature returns to town.
Yeah, I mean, the only option then, you know, if you have a deficit and you can't make the cuts, you don't want to make the cuts, it's like, okay, well, then we got to raise taxes. That's their option. And this is the worst possible thing you could do at a time when we're trying to have an economic recovery. People are trying to, rebuild their lives amidst or post this crisis. I think, you know, Texans need to be very aware of what's going on with their local officials. They need to be engaging there, and they need to be making sure that they're speaking out to say, we got to do something now. Otherwise, we're going to be talking about massive tax increases 6 months from now, which is, you know, another fight.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, appreciate you guys joining me, sharing the news on this. For folks that are listening, go check out www.texasscorecard.com. We're staying tuned in, whether it's from the office or from home. But
there's no paywall.
Yeah, there's no paywall. We're staying on top of these things, trying to stay in touch and see what's happening day by day and reporting those things in ways that can give folks action items of things that they can be doing to protect their state, their livelihoods, and their families.
Yeah.
So thank you guys for joining me.
Yeah, and wash your hands.